Part 2. Wind's Approach. Shallan, Kaladin, Adolin, Sadeus. 13. The Day's Masterpiece. War form is worn for battle and reign, claimed by the gods, given to kill. Unknown, unseen, but vital to gain, it comes to those with the will. From the Listener's Song of Listing, 15th Stanza. The wagon rattled and shook its way across the stone ground. Shallan perched on the hard seat next to Bluth, one of the slab-faced mercenaries Tevlakov employed. He guided the Chull pulling the wagon and didn't speak much, though when he thought she wasn't looking, he would inspect her with eyes like beads of dark glass. It was chilly, but she wore a hat she'd found in Yasna's things against the sun just in case. She wished the weather would turn, and spring, or even summer, would come for a time. That wasn't likely in a place notorious for its permanent chill. Having improvised a blanket from the lining of Yasna's trunk, Shallan draped it over her knees and down to her feet, as much to obscure how tattered her skirt had become, as against the cold. She tried to distract herself by studying the surroundings. The flora out here in the southern frostlands was completely unfamiliar to her. If there was grass, it grew in patches along the leeward sides of rocks, with short spiky blades, rather than long waving ones. The rock buds never grew larger than a fist, and they didn't open all the way, even when she'd tried pouring water on one. Their vines were lazy and slow, as if numbed by the cold. There were also spindly little shrubs that grew in cracks and along hillsides. Their brittle branches scraped the sides of the wagon, their tiny green leaves the size of raindrops folding and pulling into the stalks. The shrubs grew prolifically, spreading wherever they could find purchase. As the wagon rolled past a particularly tall clump, Shallan reached out and snapped off a branch. It was tubular, with an open center, and felt rough like sand. "These are too fragile for high storms," Shallan said, holding it up. "How does this plant survive?" Bluth grunted. "It is common, Bluth," Shallan said, "to engage one's traveling companion in mutually diverting dialogue."
"I do that," he said darkly. "If I knew what in damnation half those words meant."
Shallan started. She honestly hadn't expected a response. "Then we are even," she said. "As you use plenty of words I don't know. Admittedly, I think most of them are curses." She'd meant it light-heartedly, but his expression only darkened further.
"You think I'm as dumb as that stick?"
"Stop insulting my stick." The words came to her mind and almost to her lips, unbidden. She should have been better at holding her tongue, considering her upbringing. But freedom, without the fear that her father was looming behind every closed door, had severely diminished her self-control. She suppressed the taunt this time. "Stupidity is a function of one's surroundings," she said instead.
"You're saying I'm dumb because I was raised that way?"
"No. I'm saying that everyone is stupid in some situations. After my ship was lost, I found myself ashore but unable to make a fire to warm myself. Would you say that I'm stupid?" He shot her a glance, but did not speak. Perhaps to a dark eyes, that question sounded like a trap. "Well, I am," Shallan said. "In many areas, I'm stupid. Perhaps when it comes to large words, you're stupid. That's why we need both scholars and caravan workers, Guardsman Bluth. Our stupidities complement one another."
"I can see why we need fellows who know how to light fires," Bluth said. "But I don't see why we need people to use fancy words."
"Shh," Shallan said. "Don't say that so loudly. If the Light Eyes hear, they might stop wasting their time making up new words, and instead start interfering with the business of honest men. He glanced at her again. Not even a glimmer of humor in the eyes beneath that thick brow. Shallan sighed, but turned her attention back to the plants. How did they survive high storms? She should get out her sketch pad and... No. She blanked her mind and let it go. A short time later, Tavlakov called the midday halt. Shallan's wagon slowed, and one of the others pulled up beside it. Tag drove this one, with the two parshmen sitting in the cage behind, working quietly at weaving hats from reeds they'd gathered in the morning. People often ordered parshmen to do such menial work, something to make sure all of their time was spent earning money for those who owned them. Tavlakov would sell the hats for a few chips at his destination. They kept working as the wagon stopped. They would have to be told to do something else, and had to be trained specifically for each job they did. But once they were trained, they would work without complaint. Shallan had difficulty not seeing their quiet obedience as something pernicious. She shook her head, then held out her hand to Bluth, who helped her from the wagon without further prodding. On the ground, she rested her hand on the side of the vehicle and breathed in sharply through her teeth. Stormfather! What had she done to her feet? Painspren wiggled out of the wall beside her, little orange bits of sinew, like hands with the flesh removed.
Brightness, Tavlakov said, waddling her direction. I'm afraid we haven't much to offer you in the way of meals. We are poor for merchants, you see, and cannot afford delicacies.
Whatever you have will suffice, Shallan said, trying to keep the pain from showing in her face, though the spren had already given her away. Please have one of your men get down my trunk. Tavlakov did so without complaint, though he watched hungrily as Bluth lowered it to the ground. It seemed a particularly bad idea to let him see what was inside. The less information he had, the better off she would be. These cages, Shallan said, looking over the back of her wagon. From those clasps at top, it looks like the wooden sides can be affixed over the bars.
Yes, Brightness, Tavlakov said. For high storms, you see.
You only have enough slaves to fill one of the three wagons, Shallan said, and the parshmen ride in another. This one is empty and will make an excellent traveling wagon for me. Put the sides on.
Brightness, he said with surprise. You want to be put into the cage?
Why not? Shallan asked, meeting his eyes. Certainly I'm safe in your custody, tradesman Tavlakov.
Yes?
You and your men must be well acquainted with rough travel, Shallan said calmly. But I am not. Sitting day in and out in the sun on a hard bench will not suit me. A proper carriage, however, would be a welcome amelioration of this wilderness journey.
Carriage? Tavlakov said. It's a slave wagon.
Mere words, tradesman Tavlakov, Shallan said. If you please. He sighed, but gave the order, and the men pulled the sides out from beneath the wagon and hooked them up on the outside. They left off the back one, where the cage door was. The result did not look especially comfortable, but it would offer some privacy. Shallan had Bluth haul her chest up and inside, to Tavlakov's dismay. Then she climbed in and pulled the cage door shut. She held her hand out through the bars toward Tavlakov.
Brightness?
The key, she said.
Oh.
He pulled it out of a pocket, regarding it for a moment, too long a moment, before handing it to her. Thank you, she replied. You may send Bluth with my meal when it is ready, but I shall require a bucket of clean water immediately. You have been most accommodating. I will not forget your service.
Thank you?
It almost sounded like a question, and as he walked away, he seemed confused.
Good.
She waited for Bluth to bring the water, then crawled, to stay off her feet, through the enclosed wagon. It stank of dirt and sweat, and she grew nauseated thinking of the slaves who had been held here. She would ask Bluth to have the parchment scrub it later. She stopped before Yasna's trunk, then knelt and gingerly raised the lid. Light spilled out from the infused spheres inside. Pattern waited there as well. She had instructed him not to be seen, his shape raising the cover of a book. Shallan had survived, so far. She certainly wasn't safe, but at least she wasn't going to freeze or starve immediately. That meant she finally had to face greater questions and problems. She rested her hand on the books, ignoring her throbbing feet for the moment. These have to reach the shattered plains. Pattern vibrated with a confused sound, a questioning pitch that implied curiosity. Someone needs to continue Yasna's work, Shallan said. Eurythiru must be found, and the Alethi must be convinced that the return of the Voidbringers is imminent. She shivered, thinking of the marbled parchment working just one wagon over.
You continue? Pattern asked.
Yes. She'd made that decision the moment she'd insisted that Tevlakov head for the shattered plains. The night before the sinking, when I saw Yasna with her guard down. I know what I must do. Pattern hummed, again sounding confused. It's hard to explain, Shallan said. It's a human thing.
Excellent, Pattern said, eager.
She raised an eyebrow toward him. He'd quickly come a long way from spending hours spinning in the center of a room or climbing up and down walls. Shallan took out some spheres for better light, then removed one of the cloths Yasna had wrapped around her books. It was immaculately clean. Shallan dipped the cloth into the bucket of water and began to wash her feet. Before I saw Yasna's expression that night, she explained. Before I talked to her through her fatigue and got a sense of just how worried she was, I had fallen into a trap. The trap of a scholar. Despite my initial horror at what Yasna had described about the parchment, I had come to see it all as an intellectual puzzle. Yasna was so outwardly dispassionate that I assumed she did the same. Shallan winced as she dug a bit of rock from a crack in her foot. More pain spren wiggled out of the floor of the wagon. She wouldn't be walking great distances any time soon, but at least she didn't see any rot spren yet. She had better find some antiseptic. Our danger isn't just theoretical, Pattern. It is real and it is terrible.
Yes, Pattern said, voice sounding grave.
She looked up from her feet. He had moved up onto the inside of the chest's lid, lit by the varied light of the differently colored spheres. You know something about the danger? The parchment, the Voidbringers? Perhaps she was reading too much into his tones. He wasn't human, and often spoke with strange inflections.
My return, Pattern said. Because of this.
What? Why haven't you said something?
Say, speaking, thinking, all hard, getting better.
You came to me because of the Voidbringers, Shallan said, moving closer to the trunk, bloodied rag forgotten in her hand.
Yes, Patterns, we, us, worry. One was sent. Me.
Why to me?
Because of lies.
She shook her head. I don't understand. He buzzed in dissatisfaction.
You, your family.
You watched me with my family? That long ago?
Shallan, remember.
Again those memories. This time not a garden seat but a sterile white room, her father's lullaby. blood on the floor.
No.
She turned away and began cleaning her feet again.
I know little of humans, Pattern said. They break. Their minds break. You did not break, only cracked.
She continued her washing.
It is the lies that save you, Pattern said. The lies that drew me.
She dipped her rag in the bucket. Do you have a name? I've called you Pattern, but it's more of a description.
Name is numbers, Pattern said. Many numbers. Hard to say. Pattern. Pattern is fine.
As long as you don't start calling me erratic as a contrast, Shallan said. What does that mean? She asked.
I am thinking, Pattern said. Considering the lie.
The joke?
Yes.
Please don't think too hard, Shallan said. It wasn't a particularly good joke. If you want to ponder a real one, consider that stopping the return of the Voidbringers might depend on me, of all people. She finished with her feet as best she could, then wrapped them with several other cloths from the trunk. She had no slippers or shoes. Perhaps she could buy an extra pair of boots from one of the slavers? The mere thought made her stomach churn, but she didn't have a choice. Next, she sorted through the contents of the trunk. This was only one of Yasna's trunks, but Shallan recognized it as the one the woman kept in her own cabin, the one the assassins had taken. It contained Yasna's notes, books and books, full of them. The trunk contained few primary sources, but that didn't matter, as Yasna had meticulously transcribed all relevant passages. As Shallan set aside the last book, she noticed something on the bottom of the trunk. A loose piece of paper? She picked it up, curious, then nearly dropped it in surprise. It was a picture of Yasna drawn by Shallan herself. Shallan had given it to the woman after being accepted as her ward. She'd assumed Yasna had thrown it away. The woman had little fondness for visual arts, which she considered a frivolity. Instead, she'd kept it here with her most precious things. No, Shallan didn't want to think about that, didn't want to face it.
Pattern said. You cannot keep all lies, only the most important.
Shallan reached up and found tears in her eyes. For Yasna. She'd been avoiding the grief, had stuffed it into a little box, and set it away. As soon as she let that grief come, another piled on top of it. A grief that seemed frivolous in comparison to Yasna's death, but one that threatened to tow Shallan down as much or even more. My sketch pads, she whispered. All gone.
Yes, Pattern said, sounding sorrowful.
Every drawing I've ever kept, my brothers, my father, mother, all sunk into the depths, along with her sketches of creatures and her musings on their connections, biology and nature. Gone. Every bit of it gone. The world didn't depend upon Shallan's silly pictures of sky eels. She felt as if everything was broken anyway.
You will draw more, Pattern whispered.
I don't want to. Shallan blinked free more tears.
I will not stop vibrating. The wind will not stop blowing. You will not stop drawing.
Shallan brushed her fingers across the picture of Yasna. The woman's eyes were alight, almost alive again. It was the first picture Shallan had drawn of Yasna, done on the day they'd met. The broken soul caster was with my things. It's now on the bottom of the ocean, lost. I won't be able to repair it and send it to my brothers. Pattern buzzed in what sounded like a morose tone to her. Who are they? Shallan asked. The ones who did this, who killed her and took my art from me. Why would they do such horrible things?
I do not know.
But you are certain that Yasna was right? Shallan said. The Voidbringers are going to return?
Yes, Spren. Spren of him. They come.
These people, Shallan said. They killed Yasna. They were probably of the same group as Cabsal, and as my father. Why would they kill the person closest to understanding how and why the Voidbringers are coming back?
I,
he faltered. I shouldn't have asked, Shallan said. I already know the answer, and it is a very human one. These people seek to control the knowledge so that they can profit from it. Profit from the apocalypse itself. We're going to see that doesn't happen. She lowered the sketch of Yasna, setting it between the pages of a book to keep it safe.